Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 901, Georgia Lee Hussey, founder of Modernist Financial.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
The dominant culture is telling us a lot of things about what we're supposed to do with our money and our resources. And I like a sort of broader definition of money as just what are our resources?
Welcome to So Money, everybody. Our guest today is Georgia Lee Hussey, who is the founder of Modernist Financial. She did not envision having a career in finance. In fact, prior to being a financial advisor, she was a creative artist, and she felt like she wasn't supposed to be good with money, right? You're supposed to be the starving artist. Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Today, Georgia is helping her clients manage their financial life with values, with progressive values at that. We're going to dive into what that means. But a little bit more about Georgia. You know, she found herself at one point struggling with a subprime mortgage during the financial crisis, like a lot of us. And that was actually the inspiration for launching her financial planning firm, Modernist Financial, which is on a mission to build a world where progressive people feel permission to enjoy today while also investing in our common future.
Modernist Financial has been named one of the largest LGBTQ plus owned businesses in Oregon and one of Portland's largest wealth management firms. Very excited to bring on the show Georgia Lee Hussey. Georgia Lee Hussey, welcome to So Money. It's been a while since we shared the stage at Goop in Goop Health. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be talking with you today.
And you're based in one of my new favorite cities, Portland. I got the opportunity to visit last winter, or I guess fall winter, and you chose Portland as your now like place of residence. I have no doubts as to why, but what was your drawing to Portland?
Yeah, Portland is a very magical city to me, in large part because there's a strong commitment to community engagement and volunteering and being of service. And it's very built into the community. When I first moved here, right after I graduated from college, I started a little gallery, art gallery in the corner of this warehouse I was working in. And it was amazing, Farnoosh. I spent like $7 on flyers at the local Kinko's. And we would end up getting like 200 or 300 people coming to a show. And coming from New York, where that is not how resources work, I was amazed by how easy it was to become part of the city and to have an impact. So when I was becoming an adult in my late 20s, I realized, you know, I really actually want to be in Portland for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And so that's what's one of the things that I found interesting about your background is that while today you're the CEO, founder of Modernist Financial, which I want to really dive into because you've got some unique approaches to money, your background is not in money. It's actually in the arts. So tell me a little bit about that world that you was sort of your past life, but also I think very much still alive in the work that you do with money.
Yes, I was trained at Sarah Lawrence College, where I went to school. My focus was on installation sculpture and creative writing. And I was working towards being a professional artist. I did my installation work. I often worked in media that had to do with fire. I'm real into anything that would melt and then become solid again, very alchemical. So I was a glass blower. I was a welder. I was in wax casting, metallurgy, metalwork. And I really loved the opportunity to express complex ideas in simple and emotionally resonant ways. And same thing with my writing work as well. So I wrote creative nonfiction and fiction. And like many people, I had the realization in my mid-20s, I was like, oh, I don't have a trust fund, unlike many of the people that I went to college with. And I don't have financial backing for my family. So the effort, the things that I would have had to give up in order to be a professional artist, I was just not willing to do. But the joy is that I really think being trained as an artist has made me an amazing entrepreneur. Because being an artist is incredibly entrepreneurial. We just never call it that. We never call it by its name in our culture. So I definitely lean hard into habits of creativity and visioning. You know, if I am thinking about the business, I'm more likely to go to the art museum than I am to go to a business book. So those things are still alive and well in Modernist.
It's refreshing to hear that because I've had a number of artists on So Money, and a lot of my friends are artists, and I actually have a friend who has a podcast for artists to teach them the importance of thinking like a business person, thinking like an entrepreneur, because I think that there is this characterization of artists that you have to sort of be that, you know, that starving artist, right? That the struggle has to be real because the struggle is what creates beautiful art. I don't know. There is that mindset trap actually that I think is still relevant and out there, which prevents a lot of otherwise really skilled creative people from becoming financially stable.
Absolutely. You know, this is when I really understood the concept of money stories, is when I identified for myself that I seem to have this polarity or this binary idea of who I could be in relationship to money as a creative person. And that was, I could either be starving in a attic somewhere making art and being creatively whole, or I could be a sellout and be successful, and that I would lose all of my creative integrity. And it's very clear that there was not much of a middle path there, for me, at least in the stories that I had inherited from the culture at large, from, you know, academia, from the arts world in general. And it's either you're Jeff Koons or you're nobody. and the nobody is actually preferable because you're authentic to your creative being. And none of that story is very helpful to any of us, let alone the arts community.
So it sounds to me like even at a young age, although, you know, an artist probably not making a ton of money, you had it seems to be a pretty healthy mindset in terms of knowing that there's more out there, that you have to be kind of in control in the driver's seat of your own financial life. But I understand it was a bit of a crisis in your mid to late 20s that actually led you to having a more intense passion relationship with money. Tell us about that quote unquote crisis moment.
Yeah. Home ownership is one of the great myths of finance, I believe. This idea that we need to buy a home and then that shows that we are adults, that we're financially mature. And I had that lesson in a relatively dangerous time, which was the subprime mortgage, soon to be crisis. And I bought a house. I basically moved back from New York to Portland, was like, all right, I'm going to be in Portland. This is my home. These are my people. This is where I want to start at this next phase of my life. At that point, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to be a professional artist and support myself. So I was also in a searching moment of like, all right, am I going to dig deeper into publishing? You know, where was I going to go? And so I bought this house because all of my friends were in Portland and buying houses, and they made it seem so easy. And it was really easy. You'll love this, Farnoosh. I had a 550 credit score.
Oh.
I had no savings. And I got money back at closing with no down payment. here's the subprime mortgage crisis. And so luckily, I am a person who does what they say they're going to do, and also had all of the privilege that is required to be able to back that up, right? So I'd always worked in sales to support my art practice, and I realized very quickly that I had this huge mortgage payment every month. I was a single person owning this house, and I just started cobbling together how to keep it all going. And I quickly realized that I had no idea how to budget, and I had not learned those skills in my youth. Like most of us, nobody learns how to do that basic day-to-day financial work. And it was definitely a crisis trying to figure out how to pay that bill. And on a sales job where I had irregular income as well. And so I just started learning everything I could from basically blogs, the pre-podcast reality of the mid-aughts, and started learning everything I could about how to budget. And then I just started becoming more and more interested, and then seeing more and more parallels between personal finance and many of the stories that I had been most compelled by. I mean, my joke is always that Jane Austen is all about crappy estate planning and misogyny. But, you know, like the world I had lived in as an artist and a lover of literature, it's all stories about money and resources and who's included and who's not included. And that's really where the interest was born. And then in addition, looking around and realizing that most of the people I cared about, creative folks, queer folks, were not included in the conversation. And we were intentionally excluded. As a person who shows up with femininity, whatever your gender identity, you're not supposed to be good at money. You're supposed to be good at buying handbags and lipstick. Like we all know the tired tropes, right? So that also got me riled up of this, I'm not going to let the patriarchy run this particular show because there's too much power here.
Yeah, woman. So in some ways, the subprime mortgage was a blessing because it really transitioned you into now this world that feels very first nature to you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in many situations, I don't know about you, but many of my mornings are also my celebrations, right? Mm-hmm. And so I definitely am thankful for the incredible learning opportunity. I was also incredibly lucky to be able to sell that house before the downturn started. I was able to use those proceeds to pay for my CFP education and then fund my career transition.
So let's now talk about Modernist Financial, which is your firm, and it is built on a foundation of creativity and collaboration. That's very Georgia. And that you are really about, when you meet with clients, it's really about figuring out how to align wealth values with progressive values, with our progressive values. It seems like this is almost like personal finance 2.0, where a lot of us are just trying to get to 1.0. Like, I need to budget, I need to learn how to save, I need to get out of debt. And then I can start thinking about my progressive values and how to align that with my budget and my spending. But what do you think? Is that actually not true? Or do you think we can do that in at the same time as we're trying to kind of just basically learn the ropes?
Yeah, I do think we can do it at the same time. Though I have caveats to that, you know, for example, sustainable investing or ESG investing is nascent. It's a new part of the investing world, right? So it's not as easy to engage with as just like a Vanguard index fund. Now, Vanguard has sustainability portfolios and index funds now, right? So it is a little easier. Portland is a place that has an incredible cultural value around supporting local businesses. That's actually incredibly impactful in our local economy to make a choice to buy office supplies from a local office company, if you can find one, versus Amazon. Or buying books, you know, I pay a premium to buy my books at Powell's down the street, or other small bookstores. You know, there's a lot of ways to orient our financial lives around the things that we value. You know, we became a B Corp because I don't believe that you have to get successful as a business and then start to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. If anything, I believe that doing the right thing will actually make us more successful in all the other B Corps and other organizations that are really committed to being a force of good in the business world, not just a force for profit. Not that I don't like profit.
Right. I mean, let's be honest. Well, tell me a little bit about the types of clients that are drawn to you. And for anyone listening, you know, what is the best way to get started with your philosophy? Mm-hmm. If you're all the way in Portland, we can't all geographically get to you, although you probably work with online clients. But what are some of the ways that we can sort of adopt some of these principles on our own?
Yeah, great question. So we have a ton of resources on our website because our goal is to be able to eventually serve the entire income spectrum. You know, as a firm, we're too small at this point to be able to offer services across all needs. So at this point, we focus on high net worth clients. So our minimum for a new client is $1 million of investable assets. So, you know, we're not for everyone, but because of that and with our long-term intent to support the whole income spectrum, we have a ton of resources on our website so that people can get access to these ideas and be able to implement them on their own. I think it all starts with just talking about money, as you talk about all the time, right? If we live in a world where money is a closeted topic, where we don't discuss it with our spouse, our children, our family, at work, we're not able to even tease out the meaning that we want to find in money. So I think the conversations are so important. And we practice something called financial life planning, which really is certified financial planning 2.0, where we're taking all of the ideas around behavioral finance and theories of adult learning and family of origin theory and adding that to all of the information about how much do you need to save and how should you do your cash flow, et cetera, so that people can bring both parts of themselves to the conversation. I think oftentimes part of the way that the dominant culture operates is by making money all about the numbers, but you know, telling somebody they just need to save more is like telling somebody they just need to lose some weight, implying that that's easy. It's not. We're humans trying to make behavioral change, right? So engaging in who we are, what our values are, helps us be more motivated and paint a bigger vision of who we want to be in this after we've done this work, after we've started this journey. And so the resources I mentioned, there's a downloadable toolkit on our website that gives you basically three different tools that we use with our clients to help them understand their relationship with money. One is about their financial satisfaction in about 24 different areas, including, am I satisfied with the way I communicate about money? Am I satisfied with the amount of stress that money creates in my relationships? As well as, am I satisfied with my retirement nest egg? There's a life transitions tool, because financial planning is basically a bell curve in which we plot different transitions out on that bell curve of our lives. And we're going to retire. We might need to care for our family and our parents. If you have kids, sending them to school, you know, all the various goals we have, those transitions are really important to sort of visualize on a timeline. Mm-hmm. Ahead of us, which is not easy for humans to do. We are short-term thinkers.
And right? It's abstract, you know,
super abstract.
What is retirement? Am I going to retire? Mm-hmm. You know, there was a study that found that if you age render your face digitally online to look like you might look in your 80s, you will actually save more for that person. It's actually a catalyst for saving more for retirement, because it's now something that you can really see.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's one of the reasons I love Advanced Style. I don't know if you know that street fashion blog. It's all about fabulous older people in urban areas and their fashion.
Oh.
And I always look at that as a way to sort of think about my future self. I'm like, okay, what does 75-year-old Georgia Lee Hussey want? She wants nice clothes, good food, a fabulous neighborhood and place that she gets to live. She wants to be able to walk everywhere. You know, she wants to be able to have the ability to walk everywhere. So, you know, visioning, as you're saying, visioning who that 75-year-old or 90-year-old self is helps me make better choices today when I'm like, do I want to go on another trip or do I want to fully fund my Roth IRA?
Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/SoMoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/SoMoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/SoMoney. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even the same day with a local Redfin agent who can help guide guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
Ability to walk everywhere is an important distinction, right? That implies right. You want to start investing in your health and making sure you have the right insurances in place. All right, let's talk about our childhood. I know that when we were together at InGoop Health, part of what we discussed with our workshop attendees was our personal money stories, because often those are the seedlings for how we end up evolving as people who have with financial relationships, with actual, you know, thoughts and feelings around money. So going back in time, Georgia, what's a money experience from childhood that has impacted you as an adult?
You know, the answer to this question changes over time, which I found really interesting. And recently I've been thinking a lot about the all-girls Catholic school that I went to. I was not Catholic, but it was the best school that our family could afford for my education. And at that time, the sisters were a diminishing population. There were almost no novices coming into the work. And as I've become an adult, I've developed a practices in Buddhism, and I try and maintain my meditation practice. And part of my personal care is going to quarterly meditation, silent meditation retreats. And I realized that the kernel of that was really, that seed was planted when I was basically first grade through 12th grade, of watching these nuns with this commitment to educating young women. And I would not have answered that 3 or 4 years ago, Farnoosh, but I'm realizing how much inspiration I have from this group of people committed to social justice, because there are some extremely left, radical, progressive sisters in America.
I love that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a book or something.
Yeah, and they're doing some incredible work around sustainability investing, and they are badasses. I mean, they will hold a major position in a company and then hold the CEO to the fire around their behavior. And it's real hard to tell a sister that you aren't going to listen to what they have to say as a CEO. So I've been thinking a lot about what it means to build intentional community, what it means to have a life's work and a vow. That doesn't necessarily mean a religious vow, but for me, you know, a vow to do well in the world, to make hopefully support the world in becoming a better place in the work that I do on a daily basis, in the work that the firm does. So, and they were happy as a community. You know, they had each other. They didn't have a whole lot of stuff, but I think there's a great wisdom in that concept, which leads into my sort of meta life question right now for myself, and I think the world at large, is, you know, what is enough? Mm-hmm. What is enough? How do we define that for ourselves? They had defined that. Now they had a structure to help them do so. But how do I define that for myself? As a woman who also really likes you know, beautiful clothes and nice shoes and great food. So
I love hearing that. I love hearing that from you because you're exemplifying that you don't have to choose sides, right? You don't have to choose a minimalist, Buddhist lifestyle or just go the like complete material route, that there's a hybrid version.
Right. Right. And that hybrid version is your version, right? And that's the work that we do with clients, is helping them as individuals, as couples, as families, really define what is important for them so they can make choices that make sense for them. Because the dominant culture is telling us a lot of things about what we're supposed to do with our money and our resources. And I like a sort of broader definition of money as just, what are our resources? Money is certainly one of them, but time is, as you and I know, is a huge resource, right? And one that you just have less of at certain portions of your life. And social capital is an incredible resource. And defining for ourselves what enough is in those different areas of our asset classes is really important work. And I think ultimately drives better decisions, so that it's easy to take a slightly more cumbersome route to buying that printer paper or that new book you want, if you are clear about why this aligns with who you are, or how you invest your portfolio, or how you do your tax planning, right? Because there's big ways in which the financial planning work we do really pushes back against progressive political values. So I think it requires that consciousness and verbalizing, so we can lean into those beliefs and that clarity in moments of decision making.
Right. Just be more intentional.
Right. Right. Exactly. And it's not easy to be intentional around money, because a lot of us have anxiety around money. And so creating a sense of ease is also an important element there.
So a little bit of a departure here, but wanted to ask you a question, given that it's summertime and we want to know how people are spending their time this summer. And for guests, our question here is, in partnership with our sponsor Chase, we want to know, what's one way that you love to save or splurge when you travel?
Well, I just got back from a 3.5 week vacation.
No way. Who takes a 3.5 week vacation? I so envy you.
Well, a crazy lunatic CEO who should not have done that, but it was really great. But it was my 40th birthday, and I really wanted to celebrate.
You know what? I'm giving myself a 4-day weekend for my 40th birthday. I think I'm doing 40 wrong.
Darling, up that time.
Up that by, add a zero to the number of days.
I have never done a trip like this that was this full and full of the things I actually wanted to do. So we put aside a certain part of our budget for personal tours. And we were in Venice and Lake Como and London. And in Venice, we had some amazing tour guides. And I realized that for me, when I'm traveling, having context is super important for me to be able to enjoy the space I'm in, because otherwise I feel like I'm just seeing things, but I don't know why, and I don't know what it means. So for example, we did a tour of the Jewish ghetto in Venice, which is, I don't know if you know, was the first urban planned segregation of people into a separate space. I knew about this from my queer architecture class at Sarah Lawrence, because that's how we do. We had this tour, and it was so fascinating for Anoush, because this was also where banking was started, in this little tiny, like literally, I don't know, it took us 3 minutes to walk across the main portion of the ghetto. And so we saw the Banco Rosso, which is, so when you say that you're in the red, it was because the Banco Rosso, which was from like the 1500s, was saying that you were out of money. So, you know, we could have just walked through the ghetto and like, oh, that looks like it might be a synagogue, or that looks like it might be a worship, or that looks old. I don't know. Having a expert there to help us understand was super helpful and made the whole thing a much richer experience.
In the red, Banco Rosso. Was that Venice, you said?
Yeah, in Venice. Yeah. If you look up the Jewish ghetto and the history of banking, the whole area is fascinating.
Interesting. I've been to Venice. Didn't get that education.
Yeah, it's an overwhelming place.
It is. And like sinking, right?
Yes. Well, hopefully that maybe they'll figure some stuff out, because I feel like a lot of the rest of us are going to have to figure out how not to sink either. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I want to spend a little bit of time before we wrap, because I think it would be important to address your maybe advice or feedback for people who are in the queer community who want to get resources and help around their money. And because we talked earlier and you mentioned that there really isn't a ton for this population, and in some ways it's like intentional. And so I want to dedicate a little bit of time to talking about that.
Yeah. Well, I think in my experience, I use a filter to look at the information that I get from the world around me, right? When I'm learning, I have to realize who is teaching me. And so, unfortunately, until, you know, women, queer people, and people of color are running the financial world, we need to use the resources that we have available to us, right? So I think for me, it's about, and a lot of the people I know, it's about filtering what we're hearing through the speaker's reality. And that can mean things like realizing that ideas of saving and investing, the core concepts can be very helpful, but maybe going to a more aligned source for deeper insight. So, you know, again, we have a ton of resources on our website, but I would say that conversation can help us take those resources and make them ours. And as we would say in the community, queer that financial education or that personal finance. So I would say that's my main takeaway, is to do the work, but do it in community. So you can have the accountability support, but you can also question, you know, is this a misogynistic comment? Is this a cisgendered comment? And, you know, and they often are. There's a lot of subtext in the financial world around who has access and who doesn't. And I think the queer community is important, but I'm actually far more concerned about intersectional access. And I know you've done a bunch of stuff around interviewing folks who are making financial knowledge for communities of color. And that to me is the even more concerning element, because, you know, I don't know if you know, but like around inheritance, a lot of our clients are inheritors, and 41% of white college educated families will receive a significant inheritance, an average of $150,000.
Wow.
Whereas 13% of college educated Black families will get a significant inheritance, but the average figure for them is $40,000. Mm-hmm. Now, that is really a reflection of historical and racial money stories and policies and institutions. So like when the FHA came in and created mortgages in the 1930s, basically invented the 30-year mortgage that allowed white people to create this inheritance, people of color were systematically excluded from those mortgages because of redlining. So white families got real estate at super low interest rates and watched that value grow over years, while people of color missed out on this period of wealth, which wasn't allowed to compound either throughout the 20th century. So I'm definitely concerned about queer people, but I am far more concerned about people of color.
Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. Well, mm-hmm. I want to mention your website, of course, modernistfinancial.com. So many resources on your website. There's a modernist money toolkit. You're doing some really important work, Georgia. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and giving us some context. I'm all about the context too. Next time, it's all about the tours.
Yeah.
No more meandering around Venice. Nope. Mm-hmm.
That's good too, though.
Yeah. Maybe save a day for that. Georgia, thank you so much. Wishing you all the best and have a great summer.
Thank you. You too. Have a wonderful 40th.
Thanks to Georgia for joining us for her Modernist Money Toolkit. Go to modernistuniversity.com/modernist-toolkit. toolkit. And if you want to join her newsletter, go to modernistfinancial.com/newsletter. All these links are at somoneypodcast.com, as well as where you can find Georgia and Modernist Financial on social media. And if you want to get this episode and the transcript, go to somoneypodcast.com. You can grab it there. And also leave me a question for the Friday episodes of Ask Farnoosh. You can also do that on Instagram at Farnoosh Tarabi. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. And I hope your day is so money. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.